From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Lexus codename Doc Holliday Jackson. Most importantly, you are you, you are here, and that makes this Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. It's top of the week, which means it's time, conspiracy realist, for some strange news. And the strange news segments just get curiouser and curiouser. We're finding more and more odd stuff with each passing day. You should see our group chat, actually, which we probably won't publish. I don't think we should. What do you guys think?
Oh, just a snippet? Just a little taste of a screenshot?
Give
the people what they want, guys. Come on.
Well, let's figure out if that's something you all want. Let us know. We've got coups. We've got the black market. We've got some hacking afoot in multiple cases. Let's see. Where do you guys want to start? You know, Noel, actually,
I was going to chime in and say, it being a little bit of a grab baggy, updatey kind of zeitgeisty thing, I thought maybe we could start with mine. Does that sound okay to everyone?
Yeah. Let's. I think COVID is on a lot of people's
minds. It's on a lot of people's minds, I think, because of the holiday. And I think there was a lot of hope that things were going to be better by the holidays, because everybody's been really thirsting for that, you know, personal touch and seeing family and going through a lot to social distance, and was hoping maybe for a little payoff. But as it turns out, that's not the way it turned out. We've been seeing COVID cases spiking, hospitalizations spiking across the country, and also kind of just a general malaise associated with the whole COVID experience situation. Understandably so. Thankfully, you know, there is a sort of a light at the end of the tunnel, in that we've got these two vaccines that are testing very positively. And we could talk a little bit about this process too, about how they were able to accelerate it, because I think there's a lot of misconceptions around that. But it looks like they're already shipping. I think I saw a story today. A nurse in somewhere in New York was given like the first kind of televised injection of the Pfizer COVID vaccine, which was tested and proven to be 95% effective in, I believe, fighting the disease, and like a little under that in completely preventing it. But I think you need two instances of it. I think that's really important that you get the second dose of it. So understandably, there's a lot of demand for this product. There's already a lot of competition in developing it. And now we've got it. What is it? Pfizer? What was the other company, Ben?
There are a couple in phase three trials. There's Moderna's vaccine, Janssen, as well as AstraZeneca.
That's
right. So you'll probably hear all four of those in the news. But right now, Pfizer is the only one that is CDC approved.
That's exactly right. And we could talk a little bit about this before we even get into the story. What they've done, to my understanding, guys, in fast-tracking this, is not just like willy-nilly fast-tracking it. It's a three-step process in vetting these types of medications. And I believe they got rid of step two. Step three is all of the placebo effect studies, studying for side effects. Obviously, we don't have a long enough timeline to know any potential long-term side effects, but I think within the best of their ability, or of the ability of any clinical trials, they're going to find out if there are any immediate side effects that are to be worried about. I've been seeing a couple of articles discussing the concern of it causing facial paralysis on one side, but then there was a kind of a clarification article that came up after that that said that there was it wasn't directly linked to it. And I believe there were a handful of deaths involved in the clinical trials, but then those came back around and weren't determined to not be directly linked to it either, but they are watching for the facial paralysis. So with all of this kind of hustle to get this, you know, medication out as quickly as possible, and the holidays and all of that, I started looking into the idea of black market surrounding not only the vaccine, but also looking back, you know, into the big travel push that happened during Thanksgiving, black market COVID test results. And I actually was getting a haircut the other day, and the person cutting my hair mentioned that there were reports of people buying forged, falsified, negative COVID test results that they could present at, you know, check-in or whatever at the airport, because that is a requirement for a lot of airlines. And I found an article that talked about that very thing. So we can start there and then go into the vaccine stuff. Just this is like it's basically a month old story. It's why I wanted to caveat it, but it's not something we've discussed. I think it's interesting.
So just to be clear, this is somehow just a piece of paper that's being generated and purchased that says you've got negative results.
Well, that's the thing, guys. It's like when you go get a COVID test, you get your results via text message or like an email. And how hard is it to screenshot that text message, match the font, and just change the name and birthday associated with it? It's really nothing much more advanced than that. And that's what this article that I found on insider.com talked about. And again, it's from about a month ago, from November 16th, talking about there's a thriving black market for fake COVID-19 tests. And the travel industry is just beginning to kind of get wise to it and crack down. But it really isn't anything much more advanced than what I just described, because we don't really have the infrastructure to. That's also a question I have about like the future of all this stuff. When there is a vaccine, are we then going to have some kind of like notarized credential, like a passport, like some sort of stamp document officially, you know, notarized that shows that we got the vaccine? Or have a negative result or have the antibody.
Right. Yeah. So it's a longstanding thing, the idea of proven paper documentation for vaccine for international travelers. So you could just take that same, admittedly outdated, I would say archaic system and transfer it over. But with the push to be paperless, what we would probably see is a what we probably see is a government-created website or monitoring system that probably is very expensive for Uncle Sam and then probably has a ton of tech issues. But what I saw with the fake test, the first report I heard occurred in France. That's right. Charles de Gaulle.
Yep, and they caught somebody who was selling them.
At Charles de Gaulle, where like seven people were arrested for selling these fake certificates. So they were just forgers. They didn't have, to your point, they did not have some kind of infrastructure. They just, to fly, they needed a piece of paper that said they were good to go. These also cost from $180 to $360. So feel free to negotiate if you're already going to be a horrible person.
Yeah, and that's sort of what it comes down to, isn't it? It's essentially putting everyone else at risk so that you can do whatever you want. And that's why I think the whole politicization of a lot of this stuff is so infuriating, because like the idea of wearing a mask isn't even really for you as much as it is for others, and to prevent the spread if you happen to have it. And for others, just comfort level, you know? So that's always kind of blown my mind. That's become such a, you know, hot button issue. But it's true with this, like you said, Ben, it literally was, you know, in this Insider article, someone was talking about how everybody they know has a COVID test. And it's almost like it's even easier than like faking a urine test. Like, let's say you have a job that's trying to screen you for drugs and you know that you've smoked marijuana recently, which is the one that stays in your system the longest. So you get your friend to give you their urine and you keep it in like a bag taped to your leg or something. So I've heard. But this is like that, but even easier, because with the urine, they take the temperature of it. You know, there's things they do, safeguards in place at a clinic or a lab to make sure you're not, you know, giving them fake urine or whatever, or somebody else's urine. And with this, it's so new that there just isn't. So it's kind of mind blowing that people would pay that much. But like you said, Ben, between $180 and $360, according to the Associated Press.
Have you heard about the proposals for a COVID-19 so-called immunity passport?
I have not, Ben, but that seems to be the kind of thing we'd be looking at. That would be more official, more traceable, some kind of database associated with it, you know. What have you? Mm-hmm. Tell us about it. I really don't know anything about it.
Are you talking about ComPass, or is this something different?
Is it called ComPass? There's the one I know about is the International Air Transport Association. This is all in the ideation stage. There's not an actual passport yet. But this would be something that would be considered a digital passport, to your earlier point, Noel. And this would allow travelers, I think it would be opt-in, but it would allow travelers to share their vaccination status and test results with Border Patrol via this app. Mm-hmm. So you would just have this on your app. Security becomes a concern. But then also, you know, even if you don't make this mandatory for travelers as a law, airlines and cargo ships and cruise ships can make it a de facto law because they'll just refuse to let you on if you don't have a negative result, which I will say is just my opinion. I think it's the right thing to do. But a lot of people are worried about what they see as overreach.
I completely agree. But come on, to those people, they won't let you on if you have the wrong size shaving gel. You know what I mean? Like, how is this more egregious than that? Or like more of an invasion of privacy or screwing around with your civil liberties? I think we're past that when it comes to air travel.
Well, it is, you know, this the whole situation, as we've discussed before, just brings up questions about healthcare, about your own health and the information associated with it. Mm-hmm. And who should have access to that information. And it's been widely commonly recognized that nobody should have it besides healthcare practitioners, yourself, and anyone else that you specifically say can have access to any of it. And a test like this falls under that same criteria, or it's the same kind of information. It's just there's a public need to know whether, you know, that one tiny aspect about your health. So something like Common Pass, which is something slightly different, it would try, at least according to their the nonprofit that's trying to make Common Pass a thing. They're saying they're trying to make essentially a trust structure for individuals to be able to share small bits of information about their health with, you know, like the TSA and other organizations that are trying to clear passengers for travel. I don't know. It's interesting. It's an interesting concept to be able to have that an app like you were talking about, Ben, where you could just flash it or just a QR code or something that just specifically has that updated information about your health. And that's it. But it's verified.
Yeah. Yeah. But think about, okay. So think about this. Let's get real dystopian and weird and depressing with it. So first off, we've had systems like this that just existed on paper, which made them more difficult and arguably a little bit more secure in some ways. Like you have to get polio vaccination or yellow fever vaccinations if you're going to different parts of the world, often developing countries, where those diseases occur at a higher frequency. But the thing about Common Pass is that it's rolling out in a couple cities, right? And flights from a discrete number of cities at first. These solutions help, but they gain the most benefits when they are at scale, when every group has them. And what should be interesting to a lot of people who recognize that now is that there are multiple kind of brand name passes coming out. Like the International Chamber of Commerce, COC, is developing something they call the AOK pass. But anyway, so there are competitors out there already. Hopefully they can work together. But the second thing is, once this kind of thing is accepted, once it's out there, this can be used to transmit all sorts of medical information unless strong safeguards are in place. Like I don't think there's any, I think this is a door that does not close. I think we need it for COVID, but I think the same technology, again, the same thing that warms you can burn you. You know what I mean?
It's the same slippery slope as that ring .com database we talked about on the last news episode, right? Where it's like, oh, on the surface, yes, this is a good thing to help protect our citizens and make sure the police knows if folks are in trouble. But then there's all kinds of other things that can get rolled up into it over time. And, you know, it's this cliche to even say, but it's like a slippery slope. And obviously this is too. But another slippery slope is the implications of how the black market enters into the actual vaccine. Okay. I mean, you know, obvious. I don't think anyone's like, oh, it would never occurred to me. But yeah, I mean, it's like the moment you have something in high demand like that, we talk about it with organ transplants all the time. We talk about it with all kinds of commodities that are only available in limited supply. And that will be absolutely no exception when it comes to COVID-19 vaccines, because we know, I think there was even like talk where it was going to get rolled out to the White House very, very quickly. And I think a lot of people probably had a problem with that, considering how many White House employees got COVID from being not super smart about social distancing. You know, politics aside, I think we can at least agree that's pretty much a fact. So the idea of giving them, I've even heard that if you've had COVID before, which I have, I got it earlier. I don't know if I've mentioned that on the show before, but early on, I was traveling and I got sick, and it was like back in March. And then I got an antibody test recently, and I did have it. So even though my instance of having gotten it was way back in March, I do still have the antibody, apparently, or at least I did, you know, however many months ago it was that I got that test. I'm not supposed to try to get the vaccine like for a long time. They are asking people like me and anyone else out there who's gotten it and survived it to hold on and not try to get it, because you technically are in better shape to be not immune, because they're not saying that. They don't really even know that the antibody makes you immune. But this black market idea is fascinating, because they're giving it to healthcare workers first, understandably. But there's even outside of the black market angle, the idea of being a what's the word they use, guys? Critical workers, or there's a term.
Essential
workers. So apparently in Florida, the World Wrestling Entertainment Organization, that's the one, not the wildlife one, the wrestling one, was deemed to be essential. And the chairman of WWE is Vince McMahon, who's really good friends with Donald Trump. And his wife, Linda McMahon, actually is on the is the chair of a super PAC for Trump. So take that, do with it what you will. But the idea of who is deemed essential workers, even in and of itself, is a little slippery and political. But once the vaccine rolls out, there's so much possibility for it to get, you know, a bunch of doses fell off a truck, you know, that kind of story.
Or counterfeit doses sold to people in need.
Oh, God, Ben, I didn't even think about that one. That's going to be a whole nother ball of wax. Mm-hmm.
Also, I would add quickly, like, regardless of your own personal political leanings, folks, it does make sense for world leaders to have early access to a virus just mm-hmm. for stability of government. And, you know, as far as the WWE, not to knock on them, you're right. Maybe essential is in the eye of the beholder. But also remember that this country, the United States, did a brilliant and a ruthless Machiavellian job of calling people essential workers and putting out nice commercials about them and not doing a damn thing to help them.
Right.
Like, other than what? $1,200 once?
Sure.
Like, there's, I would be surprised if all of the people who were described as essential workers in a lot of that propaganda, I would be surprised if they do get early access to the vaccine when the rubber hits the road. I do think it's going to be, we'll see a lot of medical personnel.
Yes.
But one important point you raised is that Pfizer, I call it the double dose, because you got to get two shots. And that the interim between those shots is going to knock a lot of people who are essential workers out of the game.
Also, there's other loopholes to consider. So, I mean, the black market stuff, we all know how that works. It basically just means folks are circumventing the law, either stealing, falsifying, whatever, bootlegging. And that could be a whole other thing. It could actually kill people. But let's just say those doses are real. They're gotten in some nefarious way, but not necessarily, because there are actually perfectly legal ways to circumvent this and to jump in line. And one of them is by having like a pre-existing condition like asthma or high blood pressure, or even being a smoker, would be considered having like a mitigating factor that would make you more high risk and could potentially bump you up in the line. It's sort of like when people were trying to get medical marijuana, and the easiest way to do that is to go to your doctor and say, I have described the symptoms of whatever it was that you needed in order to get the thing. I think we all know that happens, you know, if people are like having mild anxiety and they know that if they play it up a little bit, the doctor will probably give them like Xanax or something, you know. But this is an absolute thing that we need to be thinking about. The idea of people kind of overplaying their medical risk factors in order to convince the doctor to put them on that list.
It's a tough thing, and I'm not the right person to make the decision about who is essential and not and who gets the vaccine first, but I think anyone who is working in any kind of healthcare capacity is all immediately top of the list.
What about schools, teachers?
Well, I mean, if we're choosing to send kids back to school, then yeah, 100%. Mm-hmm. And then anyone who's, again, anybody who's handling food, like, why not? Let's do that. And then after that, if we can eat, drink water, and save people who are dying, then, you know, the rest of us, we'll get it eventually. We'll get the vaccine eventually.
One thing I think everybody gets after this is an injection of common sense. Like, I was just thinking about buffets. You guys remember buffets?
Yeah, those are cool.
Why were we going to buffets? Like, even pre-COVID. And then, of course, everyone's seen the memes where it's like, if you kiss your dog on the mouth, don't worry about what's in this vaccine, et cetera. But there are serious concerns, and the black market is a big one. And I think one of the most important parts for me that you bring up here, Noel, is that there are legal ways to circumvent this system, at least in the U.S. The healthcare system is world class if you are well to do.
Yep.
It's designed to be that way. They're not breaking the law in many cases by doing this. So it's something to keep an eye on, regardless of how you feel personally about the Pfizer vaccine or the other three that are on the way. I would pay attention. You know what I would do? I don't think this counts as insider info because we're not experts on this, but I would be, if I were an investor, I would be very, very interested in the medical monitoring technology and biotech stocks, because they're gonna zoom up, you know, maybe as much as Zoom stock. I don't know what Zoom stock is.
Good point, Ben. I'll add one last just little quote from a bioethicist from NYU named Arthur Kaplan. And to the point that you just made, Ben, about access to better healthcare, this is what he has to say about that. Some of the richest investment firms have their own mini health systems, so they can run vaccines through those doctors that give the physicals and maintain the health of the executives in the company. So to unpack that, it's basically like almost just like the most exclusive and private of insurance that's taking care of high level executives and who it behooves to, you know, get the vaccine early. And it's all at the, you know, behest of these doctors a lot of the time that are part of these health systems. So it's interesting stuff. A little scary. I know everyone will get it who wants it eventually. Really quickly before we wrap, how do you guys feel about like the whole trust factor and people even like being willing to take it? Or refusing to take it, or the idea of it being made mandatory for certain jobs, because that's a slippery slope too.
Different episode has to be mandatory for certain jobs. Don't understand the controversy.
Got it. I'm interested to have that episode. What do you think about real quick?
Made a huge mistake and started watching the U.S. version of Utopia. I've been trying to watch the British version for a long time, but I still can't get access to it. Somebody send me some Blu-rays.
Just use ExpressVPN, man.
Well, it just reignited. Yeah, well, it just reignited some of my fears, some of my personal fears about mass vaccination, even though I'm fully on board with understanding why they exist, why there are things in them that have been harmful in the past. I didn't understand fully squalene and some of these other additives to vaccines until we made that episode.
That's the shark one, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yes, that's correct.
Anything that seems to cause them to be more effective as an outside thing that kind of just jumpstarts your immune system. Like, I understand people's fears, but I think if you look if you look closely enough, the way we did in that episode, and I can't remember the name of that episode, but I'd recommend going back and listen to some of our episodes on COVID and vaccinations, just to get some more info and then do your own research. And I would say there is stuff to be slightly fearful of or fearful about, but it is not, it's not maybe to the level that you currently feel.
To be completely clear, what I don't see the controversy of people having to have vaccinations for certain jobs in general. That just makes sense. But I do understand, and I think we're very clear about that. You know, I think we did a good job with that one, Matt, where we said, you know, like, these fears about mass vaccination don't come out of nowhere. It's not something somebody just made up. There are historical additives that that give people pause. Like, I understand, and without spoiling Utopia, I get it. I mean, fiction is a mirror of fact. That's all fiction will ever be in some ways. It's a conversation with reality. So yeah, the thing is, there's a lot of missing information right now. But we want to hear your thoughts. Are you going to get the shot? If you get the Pfizer one, you have to get both of them. Remember, that first one's not going to do diddly if you don't get the follow-up. You got to get the combo.
And Ben, you mentioned like some of them are not going to have to be kept at like sub-zero temperature. That's obviously like a positive in terms of transporting and in terms of like the logistics of getting them distributed. But the Pfizer one, the one that's closest, it does, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. The Pfizer vaccine needs to be stored at minus 70 degrees Celsius. So that's very tough for supply chains, especially in developing countries.
So doesn't that mean they're sort of shooting themselves in the foot from the start? Like the other ones are going to supersede them, like if they're easier to transport? Or is it kind of like because it's just sort of like a one? These are imprecise questions. I'm just wondering, like that sort of seems like a bug, you know, like a problem.
Yeah, they're in a race to save lives, so it's really. It's not a situation where you can say millions of people are going to die, but we want to make sure this is at a more convenient temperature. I'm sure they're working on something like that, but, you know, the clock of mortality is ticking faster than usual for some.
Yep.
And speaking of clocks, ours ticks away. So we're going to take a quick break to hear a word from our sponsor, but we'll be right back.
And we have returned, but maybe we haven't returned to the U.S. Maybe we are returning to Haiti, where last year another person tried to launch a coup in this country. Coups don't get discussed super often in the Western media, partially because historically Uncle Sam is responsible for a lot of them through various proxies. This one is different because the architect of the coup, which was unsuccessful, was a former sergeant in the U.S. Marines. He was born in Haiti. And in April 2019, this Marine, Sergeant Jacques Yves Sebastian de Rosso, he started planning on going back to his homeland with a bunch of firearms to start a military or a militant group, excuse me, to overthrow the current government of Haiti and to become the president. Almost a year ago to the day, they arrived at the airport in Port-au-Prince and they were doctoring paperwork such that it seemed that he was a Marine colonel on orders, on legitimate orders to go there. And he had a friend, a guy named T.H., that's all we know so far, who would pretend to be Duracell's subordinate. And they would like fill out paperwork to transport these items. But everything that they said they were transporting, it was a lie. It was a cover story because they were taking weapons, body armor, rifle scopes, and they almost got away with it too. But those pesky folks at customs finally stopped him. And when they stopped him, he said something very interesting. They checked his luggage. He was detained. And instead of calling for a lawyer instead of remaining silent. He waived all his rights. He told the investigators he was traveling to Haiti to help the Haitian people, quote, defeat the thugs that have been creating a little bit of part of the instability in Haiti. This story is crazy, right? It's already an unfortunate thing. We saw a failed invasion of, what was it, Venezuela earlier this year. Do you guys remember that?
I do.
We've seen a couple of other lone actors, but the thing that's the most nuts about this is that this is just the most recent example of a thing that happens way more often than it gets reported. There's a Marine corporal named Hussein Farah Adid who used to lie to his bosses about missing drill periods. He would say he had to travel outside of the country. And what he was actually doing when he was doing that was returning to Somalia, where he worked for his father, Mohammed Farah Adid. The job he did for his father was to be a general in his militia, because his father's a warlord, because of course he is. And this, the coup actions, instabilizing actions of Adid, led to the deaths of 18 U.S. service members in an incident that you may most easily remember from the film and book Black Hawk Down.
Wow.
This is nuts.
Mogadishu?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Spot on. Just so. So wow. We have a lot of, like, we have multiple cases of people going out on their own, going rogue, and launching coups. Now, is this, Matt, you said this is something you hadn't heard of. Noel, was this familiar to you at all?
Not at all, no. This is all news to me.
I just feel like it's such a dangerous thing, but it also makes me feel like people are so motivated. You know what I mean? One time, people are out here changing the world for the better or the worse, and one time I legitimately fell asleep trying to put on a pair of pants. Like, this puts ambition into perspective. But also,
I just want to know more about that. We'll leave it there for now.
It was a long day. They weren't complicated pants either. It's just the same two legs that humans would have. So the reason we know about Duracell's plan was that just recently, just a few days ago, he was found guilty. It's just last week, actually. He's found guilty this past Thursday. We're recording this on December 14th. He was convicted of 5 various counts, smuggling firearms. And of course, it was acknowledged that he was going in there to train up his own secessionist group. The Justice Department said that he was going to be sentenced during March of 2021. The maximum penalty for getting caught planning a coup, at least in this situation, if you're evaluating your options, is 20 years in prison and a $250,000 fine, which gave me a tangentially related question I wanted to pass to you guys. You know how when you see people convicted and they get the maximum fine for something and it's like 250 grand or 500 grand or something like that, if they're not well-to-do, if they're not a Bernie Madoff, how do they pay that? Do their wages get garnished? Like, what happens?
I'm sure that's what it would be. There's an attempt to pay it off. And then I don't know what pressures are able to be placed on any individual who owes something like that. I just don't know. I've never experienced that before.
Yeah. Legal beagles, or legal badgers, we should say, in the audience. Let us know how that works, because it's something that's always, I haven't looked into, but it always confused me, you know, when you hear somebody get hit with a tremendous fine and you know that they are not part of the upper crust, so they probably can't pay it, you know, just out of pocket. So I guess they just spend their lives with like some crippling debt. It's kind of like student loans, right?
Yeah.
But it's crime loans.
But Ben, I just want to make sure. So the guy in question who took all this stuff, all these weapons over to Haiti. It sounds like a bunch of handguns, mostly handguns, a couple rifles, some body armor and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He was not charged in Haiti for attempting a coup. He was sent back to the U.S. and charged here or there.
Yeah. He was, because he was smuggling guns from the U.S. to Haiti. So the U.S. Justice Department came down on him because he, according to Robert Higdon, the U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of North Carolina, he violated U.S. firearms laws, particularly in relation to export and licensing. And then he says, just buries the lead here, quote, but it additionally posed concerns about our citizens unilaterally acting in relation to the government of a foreign country, especially because he's a Marine. He has the training. We talked about this earlier, right?
Yeah,
He has the expertise and familiarity to teach people. He once served as a marksman in Quantico, and this was the real deal. It makes you wonder how many. Oh, he was also impersonating a rank he did not earn, impersonating a colonel. So it makes you wonder how many close call coups or coup attempts we've had from these like Lone Rangers, right? Like the, I don't know if we ever talked about, did we talk about the Venezuelan coup on this show? It was called Operation Gideon.
Mentioned it when it came, when it was happening, but I think it was just in passing conversation.
Yeah. This one was a partnership with an American private military company called Silver Corps USA, spelled like C-O-R-P USA, to infiltrate Venezuela by sea and then forcibly remove Maduro from office. So a coup. apparently, the problem is this happened in May of this year, and apparently it was just a real show, because they had little to no chance of success. There was like this kind of slapstick attempt to get these motorboats into the area. They had former Green Berets serving as mercenaries, and the Green Berets must have just been severely unimpressed with the whole operation. And you'll recall there were some rumors quickly buried in U.S. media of a tacit agreement between Silver Corps and a couple of, I believe it was private industry actors and maybe some factions of the U.S. government itself, but no actual Uncle Sam stuff.
Wow.
So far.
It does make me think about some of these defense contracting companies and some of the essentially mercenaries that end up in war-torn areas of the world, and you know, some of our coverage of that in the past. And it also makes me think about, do you guys remember something called AeroTrade? Did you ever hear of that?
What was that again?
This is just a really similar thing that occurred. It was a company in the United States. Oh Lord, I think it was Haiti. Maybe it was a different country, but where this company was essentially training or spending money to train and provide weapons and materials for the Haitian military, I think, or maybe
that's right.
Maybe it wasn't Haiti. Was it Haiti? I don't know.
It was. You're right. You're just so. Yeah.
It was a private company like that, just providing all this stuff, and they're not going through official channels. It's almost like, it reminds me of the CIA front companies and some of the work that we've looked at in the past there, where you use a front company or a defense contractor to go in to a different country and just operate under the radar, or at least until you're caught.
Right. This also led me down a path when I was looking at coups, resistance groups, and other insurrectionist movements. This led me down a path that really disturbed me. First off, the long history of U.S. intervention in Haiti is an episode all its own. Secondly, I fell into a very disturbing rabbit hole on the practice of, like, the phenomenon of child soldiers, how they are recruited, how they are brainwashed, what happens in the aftermath. And it's honestly an episode that I feel like we should do, but it's immensely disturbing.
I think the idea of coup has always been really fascinating to me, because oftentimes, you know, a coup will overthrow an illegitimate or dangerous regime, like that already maybe seized power via a coup of their own. But it's defined as like a typically illegal, unconstitutional act by a political faction. I'm interested to hear what you guys think about the idea of coups. Are they inherently illegitimate, Or is it just a fancy word for like an uprising or a revolution?
A lot of times it's an overthrow by an outside actor, or at least spurred on by an outside actor. A lot of times, not always.
Yeah,
not
I understand that, but I'm saying is it a specific word that refers to that, or is it only a word that's used when it's when those conditions are in play, or could you consider a coup to be a legitimate overthrow of a? Like, are coup and revolution ever interchangeable, or are they like, you know, one person's coup is another person's revolution, that kind of thing?
Yeah. Well, coup d'etat translates to blow of state. So all coup d'etat are inherently and technically illegal in the country in which they occur because they're unconstitutional. Those constitutions will have, at least on paper, some legal mechanism for the transfer of power. This is kind of silly. There's a lot of stuff in international affairs that's kind of silly. But a lot of professors and pundits will tell you that a coup is considered successful when the group, the people who are in charge of the coup, when they can hold power for about a week, for 7 days. For some reason, that's the rule. They don't take you seriously on Thursday, but if you make it to Friday, congratulations. You are the new prime minister of... Matvania. Sorry, Matt. It was just the first one that came to mind.
I've been meaning to step down for a while.
So that's something that I would love to dive into, like the history of coups. I mean, the history of human governance is one written in blood. It would be dishonest to phrase it any other way. However, I'm telling you, this child soldier thing, we have to look at it very close to cults. And it's not... I think a lot of people in the West have some stereotype of this occurring only in certain parts of the world, but it also occurs in the Middle East. It occurred in the U.S. We had child soldiers in the Civil War, you know, and we even romanticized the idea of kids lying about their age to get into the military. Like these are two vaguely related ideas, but I think they're each on their own.
We talked about this before, but my wife has personal stories working with children, like young kids who are gang members who are actively using weapons and, you know, engaging in activities that are similar to being a soldier, if not the same thing, fighting a war. So, I mean, I think it's, this is definitely something worth our time and attention. So I'm down, Ben.
Awesome. Okay. I've got one last thing on this, as we move on, you may have, if you are, whether or not you're in the U.S., if you follow U.S. domestic news, you may have heard some of the recent actions of the current administration described as a coup. I would very much like to hear your thoughts on this, conspiracy realist. Just hit us up, conspiracy@iheartmedia.com. We have our section at the end where we tell you all the ways to contact us. But the question that I have for this segment is, are the recent events in the domestic sphere of the U.S., do they or do they not meet the threshold for what would be described as an attempted coup? No judgment. Just let us know. Yes or no and why. And with that, we're going to pause for one more word from our sponsor, and we'll return with more strange news.
And we are back and moving over to United States. Let's call this domestic cybersecurity news. Many times on this show, we have spoken to you about hacking, an interesting term to describe forms of espionage, forms of snooping around sometimes just to see what can be achieved. And that's my son in the background. And depending on the aims of someone who is equipped with the skills to breach networks and get inside of, you know, whether it's a single computer or an entire network, who knows what the aims are behind any group, but there can be vast reasons for doing so. And today we're coming to you with a story about a group that is being described by the United States government as Russian government hackers and actions that were taken against several United States government agencies. So here is the Washington Post title from the article. Russian government hackers are behind a broad espionage campaign that has compromised U.S. agencies, including Treasury and Commerce. This was reported today, December 14th, the day that we're recording this episode. And according to this article, it is saying that it was just coming to light. It's kind of been known, or it's information about this attack, some might call it, others just might call it a breach, has been coming forth throughout the entire weekend, this past weekend. And there are several hackers that go by nicknames that are supposedly behind this. One is APT29, also known as Cozy Bear. These are this is a group of hackers, not just one. It's like a collective, essentially. They are supposedly, and again, it's tough to know, just that it's reporting coming from the United States and it's an attack on the United States. Hard to know how much is real info, how much is disinfo on purpose, how much is being a little more slanted because it's an us or them kind of story. But they're saying that this group is part of Russia's Foreign Intelligence Service, also known as the SVR. And they're saying that this group breached email systems. That's the primary thing that occurred here. And I guess the scary thing is that it's email systems throughout a whole bunch of the United States infrastructure, of the government infrastructure. And according to the Washington Post, the Federal Bureau of Investigation here in the United States is looking into this, and they say that the victims have included government consulting, technology, telecom, oil and gas companies in North America, Europe, Asia, and the Middle East. And this is according to, it's a group called FireEye. I can't remember if we've mentioned them before, but they are a firm that generally is watching out for these kinds of attacks. And they got breached, and they were one of the first people to kind of raise a flag. And my understanding that it was a while ago when they first said this. But then if you reach out to Russia, like if you go to the embassy in Washington, they say they call the hacking reports baseless. They say the attacks in the information space contradict Russian foreign policy and national interests, and that Russia does not conduct offensive operations in the cyber domain.
Okay, so it's just motivated patriots acting on their own, just like China's hacker army. I will say that the big difference here between this and a lot of hacks is that this is not just a hack for information. Also, the FBI said it was a state-level actor, but they did not officially say it's Russia.
They did not.
It's kind of like that Putin law, where the law is for, you know, anybody who happens to have been president of Russia. They said it was a state-level thing, but they clearly think it's Russia. The dangerous part here is the FireEye hack is not a hack for information primarily. They're not looking for, you know, database codes or learning more creepy stuff for later surveillance or SIGINT or whatever. What they did was they stole the fire. There's something Promethean about this.
Yeah.
It's like for a very basic, they stole a toolkit. So it's like, for a very basic analogy of this or comparison, imagine someone robs a gun store and they do it with a gun. And they pull this off, and then when they rob the store, they might check the register, but what they really want is more guns, more ammo that they can use in more robberies. That's what happened here, because the stuff they're taking enables them to hack into a bunch of other networks.
Yeah, exactly. So this is a document that another group, SolarWinds, filed with the Security and Exchange Commission. And what they're saying is that fewer than 18,000, that's 18,000 of its more than 300,000 customers were affected. But here's why it's important what Ben is saying. What these 18,000 people did was install an update patch, essentially, to the software. And this update patch was not like the certified one that should have been coming from SolarWinds for, you know, like when you get an official update on your computer or your Mac or your Windows machine or whatever it is. This one was falsified, And that enabled those 18,000 machines to then be activated for the purposes of this group. That's what Ben is saying. They're like getting more weapons, essentially.
Yeah, you're right. And thank you for that. Thank you for that clarification, Matt. I would say FireEye may not be familiar to a lot of our listeners, especially if you're not in the tech space or in the weird spy space, but they are familiar with you. Their clients include things like Equifax. They worked with Sony when we did that very weird episode about the Sony hack back in 2014. They've also worked with several other places. They worked with the State Department when it and other agencies were breached in 2015. It's messy because they have what you could kind of say is a skeleton key. Not quite, but their fingers are in a lot of digital pies and someone has hijacked their hand.
Yeah, but I mean... Well, these are products that are used by critical organizations. Mm-hmm. The United States military, like multiple branches, the Pentagon, the State Department, Justice Department, NASA, the Executive Office of the President, and the NSA. Like, these are all people who use this software. These are all groups that use this software. And they were able, whoever this was able to hack into the update server of this SolarWinds FireEye thing, and then through that system, jump into all these other machines. And the scariest thing is that, I mean, does anybody out there use Microsoft Office 365? That's one of the ways, they're calling it a vector in this, that they were able to carry out this attack, was by using Microsoft Office. It's a little scary. We don't know enough right now. We just know that it's gone through. Nothing necessarily has happened. There haven't been officially any consequences because of this. At least there's no reporting on that yet. But it is, let's use the word troubling.
Yeah. Yeah. Because we don't know what happens next, do we? We also don't know what the reporting filter is like. What I mean by reporting filter is the ways in which government agencies or companies choose to or choose not to disclose information to end users, citizens in the case of countries, or, you know, customers in the case of consumers. So if you are the NSA or you are FireEye or, you know, you're the FBI or something, and you absolutely get rocked on something like this, then, you know, if you're a company, you would arguably do the same if you're a government, but if you're a company, you do need to tell your customers that, like with the Sony hack. But the thing is, when you're a government agency, this whole other level of mind games comes into play. What do we disclose? How much do we disclose, right? And when do we message it? How do we say it happens? Like, look at the way Iran handled Stuxnet, which is probably one of the most famous hacking events of the past few years. How do you report that? Because you want to maintain your position and you want, I don't know, like a lot of these things, whenever you hear an anonymous source familiar with the case or blah, 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 that's someone who doesn't want to go on record because, or they've been told not to go on record because they don't want to escalate a possible conflict. But they were totally greenlit to say that. These sources who are close to the investigation. Yeah, dude, you mean the FBI?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And we're going to see fallout, man.
We're definitely going to see fallout. Hopefully just the political kind and, you know, not the nuclear kind. That's a really weird gallows humor joke. I'm sorry for that, everyone.
I loved it.
It's interesting stuff because in this article from the Washington Post, they're going back to the DNC and some of the hacking, you know, alleged hacking that was occurring there back in the day. Everyone remembers that. We certainly talked about it. And we're just going to have to wait and see, essentially.
Great.
Yeah. But this is from the article. SolarWinds monitoring tool has extremely deep administrative access to a network's core functions, which means that hacking the tool would allow anyone, they're saying the Russians, to freely root around victims' systems. So who knows what they might find or have found? We'll find out when something gets released on, I don't know, where do things get released on anymore? Is someplace.
Yeah. I would say, of course, Facebook memes, right?
They'll post it on Facebook.
I will say FireEye did yesterday release an official statement about this. You can find it if you just look at FireEye statement, solar wind, or solar winds. They took the solar wind supply chain in order to distribute this thing called, they call Sunburst. That's the name they're using, FireEye's term for the malware. So I would be hesitant to say that this is going to be an easy fix on the FireEye side or on the side of anybody who is compromised in this regard. So it's the scariest thing, just to put a sunbursty bright point on what Matt has said here, the reason you should be freaked out about this, and not in a conspiratorial way, you should be very freaked out right now, is that solar winds, according to employees, solar wind software gives you access to pretty much everything. Like, think sysadmin, system administrator, and it's used by the Pentagon and the White House.
From the sound of it, it reminds me of something. I only know this through a couple of friends of mine that are way better at computers than me, but there is something called root access, like with Macs in particular. I don't know if this translates to Windows systems as well, but it's something you have to get through, like the little terminal window that, like, where you actually enter keystroke commands to get, you know, to navigate around to different folders and stuff. And root access is like God level admin access that not only gives you access to everything, it lets you, gives you, you know, the ability to wreak havoc on systems if you so choose, like by deleting lines of code or, you know, moving things around or making things not function properly.
Yeah. Root access will be familiar to a lot of our friends who have tried to take, who have needed to take mandatory bloatware off of their cell phones, off of their smartphones.
I know we talked about this, but it really didn't dawn on me just until now that the updates that went out that were compromised were released in March and June of 2020. So they really have been active for a long time. And it is interesting that they were in there prior to the U.S. presidential election. But again, like, I don't think there's any, I don't mean that as in this group influenced the election in some way. It's just, they could probably monitor a lot of things that occurred and communications that were happening around the election. So that's fascinating stuff.
I like where your head's at, Matt. So everybody's hacked. everybody's hacked. Everybody's got fake COVID tests. What's the other one? Everybody's trying to overthrow a country. That's that's strange news today.
Oh, Mondays.
If you guys could be in charge of a country, like be the ruler of a country, A, would you want to, and B, which country? I'm just interested. What do you guys, what would you aim for? You want like a big one, or you want?
I don't know, man. It seems like a lot of trouble for not a lot of payoff. Maybe I'm just not benevolent enough. I mean, maybe if I, you know, thought I could do some good, I might do it, but I probably would just muck it up even worse.
Or you could be a monarch.
No, that's fair. But I'd probably let it go to my head and become an absolute monster.
So yeah.
I'm going to bow out.
I would change my name to Joseph. Okay. I would go just out in the middle of nowhere and start Eden's Gate. Start Hope. It would be Hope County. That's what I would call it. And
is this a Fallout? Are you doing a Fallout thing?
Huh?
Is this Fallout?
Nope, it's not Fallout. But it would just, it would definitely be, that's what I would want to do. I'd want to have my son, John, his sister and brother, like be my second, third and fourth in command. That's what I would want to do.
Wait. Just, okay. No.
It's cool.
One day, Matt, I'm going to get you one day. I'll catch these references one day. I'm up to like 75% human. So I'm going to get there one day.
This is how you find out what old video game Matt's playing. Just listen to the weird references and then type them into a search.
Is that Fallout? Is that New Vegas?
Nope.
Mm-mm.
Let's just move on.
It's not a Fallout at all, is it?
No, it's not.
Do you want me to say? No, we'll just let everybody write.
Please.
This is your part of the game, folks. So let us know what game is Matt playing currently? Let us know what country you would like to be in charge of, if you're in charge of a country, how you would do it. Let us know what you think about what we covered with mass vaccinations, with fraudulent COVID results, and whether or not people should have to get a vaccine, depending on their job, and so on. We try to make it easy to find us. We're all over the internet. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. We're on Twitter. You can find us and our excellent mods on Here's Where It Gets Crazy. And if you don't sip the social meds, you can call us directly, and you may end up on the show.
That's right. Our number is 1-833-STDWYTK. Leave that message. Let us know if we can use your name and voice on the listener mail episodes or anywhere else. We will attempt to use them if possible. And yeah, please leave your message. We'd love to hear from you.
What else can you do? You can join our Facebook group. Here's Where It Gets Crazy. That's fun. Just name a name. Any name will do. Some ref to something we've said on the show, or name of anyone involved in the show. And you are in to join in all of the conspiracy realist shenanigans there on Here's Where It Gets Crazy. If you don't want to do that, you can also, you know, get in touch with us sort of more of an old-fashioned way, pre-social media way anyway. You can send us a good old-fashioned email where we are.
Conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.